You're listening to Hearing Our Heritage, the podcast where we preserve the voices and stories of the older generation and make them accessible to younger ears. We pay tribute to those who have paved the way and learn from their lived experiences. I'm your host, Katie Pierce.
I'm N.K. for Callis, Cranny. My birthday is April 7th, 1944.
Anne Cranny is a gentle, kind soul. She's devoted her life to raising her four amazing kids and serving in the church. She is a capable and hard worker who says she has a hard time sitting still for long. She's always enjoyed being busy and doing good. She met and married her sweetheart Bill when they were just freshmen at BYU, and together they had four kids. Anne was the full-time mom and was super involved in her kids' various activities. Later in life, she took that work ethic to Nigeria, Ghana, San Francisco, Virginia, and Cyprus as a missionary for the church. You wouldn't know it now, but Anne didn't grow up with much. Her amazing story begins with her Greek immigrant dad and her very young mother.
I was born in, on 4th South and 8th West in the home where my parents lived. They had all of their children at home. They had 10 children, and I don't know about the older ones, because we kind of have like two families, but all the younger ones were born at home. Mom was married when she was 14 and a half. And so she had her first child at 15 and a half. And it was more like we were aunts and uncles for the younger ones. So she had six, and then she had the other four later. There was a lull between there of 4 or 5 years. And I am number eight. My dad came from Greece, and I don't know, and he doesn't know exactly what age he was when he came. His mom died in childbirth. He had one younger brother, he's the oldest, and so when his mom died in childbirth with Frank, he didn't have anybody, really. He was raised by, he kept saying he was raised by an uncle, an old uncle, but we kind of found out differently a little bit, But he wanted to come here and to live. But when he came, he worked on the railroad. He worked on the, different things that people in the United States didn't want to work on. He was just trying to keep active and get enough money to do things. Well, they told him that if he would go into the war, it was World War I, that they would give him his citizenship. So that's why he went. And then he got his citizenship. And he got a Purple Heart because he got wounded. He did a lot. He was a convert. When he got here, he met Mom, and Mom was a member of the church. And they did a lot of things. Their activities was going to the church dances and all those kind of things. So he enjoyed that.
And what about your mom's family and her upbringing?
My grandma was married quite young, too. And her husband ended up being an alcoholic. And so it was really hard for Mom. And that's why she married so young, as she wanted to just get out of the house, because he was kind of abusive to her. And so she got out when she could.
Yeah. Was your dad much older than your mom?
About 10 years.
Oh, wow.
They both struggled, with finances, with health, with a lot of things. It wasn't easy, And Mom, I just remember when I was in junior high to have a bath. We had one of those tubs, and then she'd have to heat water and put in there, and she'd start with the younger ones, and we would have a bath. And she didn't have a bathroom for a lot of years. We didn't have a bathroom. We had an outhouse outside that we'd have to go out to.
No kidding.
When I was younger. And
in Orem, Utah.
Uh-huh.
Wow.
But it was a nice one. It was a two-seater. and different things like that. And she didn't ever have a washer and a dryer except one of the wringer type washers, And I remember helping her wring it through the wringer. But she just, she worked really hard to take care of her family. I never had a bike growing up, never had a bedroom. I slept on the couch because we only had two bedrooms. And I was the only girl in the house at the time. And so I could sleep on the couch. And they put the boys in the one room. I didn't feel like I didn't have anything. And I knew a lot of times if I didn't work and get the money I needed, I did a lot. My first jobs and stuff were picking fruit. I was good at picking fruit. Our neighbors had big raspberry farms and different things like that. And they would ask me to pick, even though I was younger, and because I could do it. But I knew that I had to have the money. So I would do that. And that's how I got money for my clothes for school. When I was in seventh grade, I think I started picking fruit and stuff. So that's about it until I got a little older. And then I worked at, you know, like a frost top or something like that. And I always felt loved. I always felt like that I did what I needed to do. And Mom and Dad were satisfied with that.
And you had some brothers that fought in World War II. Can you tell me a little about them?
My brothers all went to the war. Most of them were in the Army. They had many experiences that were not really good. They were right in Normandy and all that stuff, getting off those boats.
Did you look up to your older siblings quite a bit then?
Yes, I did. But, you know, we weren't close. I didn't see them that much because they got married and had their families and stuff.
So what was your childhood like? Were you in sports? Were you doing activities? Were you helping on the farm? What was it like?
Well, we had a small farm, a 5-acre farm. We had one of probably of everything. We had a, you know, a couple of pigs, a couple of cows, horses, and chickens. And in the fall or the spring, we would end up killing and dressing and putting them in the freezers. And we worked on the farm a lot. I played sports during my growing up years. It was just a good childhood because there were good people and we had good friends and all the cousins and the neighborhood kids. Everybody would come to our house, you know, to play flag football, and Dad would plow the 1/2 acre or something over on the west side of the house, and we'd play in there until it was time to plant. So it was good.
And was that your dad's job? Was he a farmer or did he work somewhere else too?
He worked down at Geneva Steel, and then he'd come home and he had this 5-acre farm that he'd get up. Let's see, Dad would go to bed about 7:30 or something like that. And then he was up at 4 to, you know, feed the animals, get things together, and then he'd go to work. So he was a good worker, really did what he needed to do.
And outside of farm life, I'm told that you played a lot of sports. You were quite the athlete.
I love sports and played all the time.
Were you on teams growing up?
Well, I was on a baseball team for years. And, you know, I played all the church things, the volleyball, the basketball, the track, the just anything I could play.
And it was Anne's involvement in sports that led her to the Orem High Track team, which Bill Cranny was also a part of.
We kind of met at the track. The boys had the advantage because I had to wait till they were through high jumping. So I waited around while he jumped.
But it wasn't during track that you guys actually connected in high school. It was later when you were freshman at BYU, right?
We knew each other well enough that he asked me out, you know, to a dance at BYU. And I told him I couldn't go because I had to work, and I had to work. But he said, well, when are you off work? And I said, 9:30. And he said, well, I'll pick you up then at, you know, 10 o'clock or something. And so we went to our first dance there. And when we come home, and he walked me up to the porch, and he got really close to me like this, and then he said, did you paint your eyebrows? Where would that come from, you know? I said, no, because I wasn't much on makeup, and my eyebrows were dark. Well, we were really close, so he kissed me. But he said I kissed him. So that was our first kiss. And after we went to that dance, we started dating pretty regularly until we got married about 3 or 4 months later in the Salt Lake Temple. And we had a reservation to do that. And we got there at 7:30 in the morning to be married, and it was a record day. They had over 100 couples that got married. And so we didn't get through till 4:30, you know, because of all of the people that were there. And so the sad part was is that we had everything arranged, you know, for our luncheon and for all that kind of stuff, and it was all canceled. we lost our room, you know, for our honeymoon. So we had to find a place. So we started at one end of the city and headed toward north and tried to find something. And we finally found something. But it turned out okay.
And you're still married. So
we are.
And you still love each other.
Yes, we do.
That's really sweet.
He's wonderful.
What drew you to Bill? What made you fall in love with him?
He was quiet at that time. He was quiet. He was good looking. He was really kind.
Yeah. Were your parents in favor?
Yeah. They thought he was kind of dumb because he would do things like, you know, there was a tree that we had and it was an apple tree and they were kind of squatty apples. And Bill asked Mom what kind of a tomato tree that was. Well, he was teasing, but she took it literally, so they enjoyed Bill.
And then right after, you headed out to Flaming Gorge for a construction job for the summer, right?
We were married. We had to get some money, so we went to Detchon, Utah. Right. It was a construction town where all of the people that were working on the dam lived mm-hmm. in trailers. And so that was kind of our honeymoon place. He would get up in the morning, you know, and I'd fix him lunch and he'd take it with him and we'd eat breakfast. And then he was gone all day and didn't get back until late at night. And so later at night. So it was kind of a different experience. Bill wasn't making that much money and I was just sitting around. And so we decided and figured it out. And so we decided to come back and I got my job back at Albertson's in the bakery. And so I worked there and helped, you know, decorate cakes and do all that kind of fun stuff.
And did you work there for long at Albertson's?
When I was pregnant, I could only work up until I showed. So I had to quit my job. So I was at home. I just found things to do and trying to be a good homemaker and stuff like that, and do things. We just were so excited and happy that we were able to get pregnant, so...
And so you had your first daughter, Kim, and what was life like as a young mother? Your husband was in school and you were taking care of Kim. What was it like?
It was hard. It was hard because we didn't have a lot of money to go do things. So whatever we did, we had to improvise. And so it was hard that way, but it was good to just love my children. And I was so glad to have them all and that they were healthy and strong because I don't like to sit around. I like to do things. And so we just did a lot of activities together more than anything. And I think that's why the kids, all of our kids were good in sports and different things is because they just enjoyed going and doing things together. Got them up and going. I made sure that the kids were good swimmers. They were on the swim teams and stuff. So they're all good swimmers. And they did track and they did, you know, baseball and any sport that come along, we got them in somehow. They enjoyed it. And then they had piano lessons and, you know, just different things like that. Yeah, it was a lot of running around.
Yeah, I bet it was so busy. Were you going to all of their meets and practices and watching them or?
Yes, we were always there. Didn't want the kids to be there without us necessarily. You know?
Yes.
But we were helping some way. We'd help coach or we would... you know, just do something that would give us some reason to be there.
And all four of your kids were pretty active in athletics.
Oh, yeah.
Can you tell me a little about each of your four kids?
Well, Kim, our oldest, she loved track. She loved running and different things like that. That was probably her best sport that she liked. And she was good at piano and she's got a good voice. And then Dale, he was my really star athlete because he was elected by the class to be the most outstanding athlete of the class, you know, and as he's a junior and a senior and stuff. And he had a personality that everybody liked him. He was just an easygoing, you know, and they did very well in school, both Kim and Dale. And then Connie was my third, and she was really good at most every sport, but she was good at swimming and she wanted to be an Olympic swimmer. And she probably could have continued on, but she kept getting something that affected her shoulders. But she loved swimming. She loved volleyball and basketball and all of that stuff. she kind of got tired of it at the end. And so when she went to college, she didn't really pursue it. Dean, he was the baby. And I know the kids would always say, well, Dean gets everything. You know, how come you're so kind to Dean? How come that? And Dean said, I don't see a problem with that. And so anyway, but he was more into music and singing and things like that. He was really good at plays and stuff like that.
Yeah. So. Was that kind of foreign to you guys?
Yes. We didn't know where we got him from. He's just an easygoing. He's got a really neat personality and he gets involved in things. And so they're quite easygoing and very kind of mild-mannered. But they had a lot of friends. They would come over a lot of times.
And what did your family enjoy doing together?
I don't know. We like the outdoor things. And so we've always went camping a lot, doing, you know, Lake Powell and different things like that. And we've really enjoyed that. And I think the kids have too, because they talk about that a lot.
And what was your parenting style? Were you strict or were there tight rules? How did you teach your kids?
We'd have family home evening every week. And we just did a lot of things that were church activated. We had family rules and different things that they had to adhere to. They knew what we expected of them. And generally, they took care of that. They were well behaved. We didn't have any trouble. I know that when they'd asked Bill for something or do something, and he said no, they'd come to me, just like all the other kids do, huh?
Yes.
In the world. And so they learned really fast that they couldn't get away with that. We were on the same page. So it worked out good.
The first three kids were all born while Bill was in school. And then after graduation, Dean was born, and the family moved up to the West Valley area.
Granger is where we went for 5 or 6 years, and we were there for that long. And then we left there because it was getting really bad. Dale would be playing basketball, and I would be there refereeing or doing something, you know, to help and to be involved and to watch the kids. And he'd get a knife pulled on him, you know, a pocket knife. The kids, because they were mad because, you know, he took the ball, he stole the ball, and he went in and made a layup and things like that. But it was just getting to the point where people it just didn't feel safe anymore. And so we left and came back, and Mom and Dad had 5 acres, and they gave each one of the kids a building lot. So we built our house there in Orem.
So from where you grew up, an outhouse, an immigrant father, 10 kids to take care of, to your husband having a successful business and you having a lovely home and traveling and doing whatever you wanted to do. Was there a moment where you realized, oh, we're successful, like we've made it?
I don't know what successful means.
Yeah.
The thing is, yes, there's a point where I felt like that we had a lot of stuff. And there is now. I just feel like that we're overly blessed. I don't want our kids to ever feel like they've made it. You know what I mean? Like that they feel like they've got everything and that they forget where their blessings come from.
Anne has certainly never forgotten the source of her blessings, and that's illustrated by her devotion to God and serving others. Together, Bill and Anne decided to sell their home in Orem and move to Linden, which became their home base as they served 5 missions together.
The first mission we went on was to Nigeria, and it was kind of a shock to our system a little bit, and we really enjoyed that. Bill ended up being a counselor to the president. We did a lot of traveling, and we learned to love these people. And then we went to Ghana, but, you know, we were used to it by then, and so it wasn't a big shock. People there really don't have a lot of training, and they cook outdoors. And people get burned and they, you know, just different things like that. And they didn't know how to take care of things. And so I was talking to them about first aid and told them some of the signs of shock. I said some of the things to look out for is that they turn white. And the president said, Sister Granny, he said, "We don't turn white." And I said, "No, I guess you don't. You just get pale." And so he just, you know, he commented and he said, "And we don't have blue babies." Because, you know, if yes. you have a blue baby that yes. can't breathe and stuff. And so it was funny. After that, we were really close to him.
And tell me a little about the living conditions in West Africa.
Well, they weren't as bad as I thought. We had to boil everything, boil all the water. We had to bathe all the food and stuff in Clorox water. And as long as we followed the directions that they gave us at the MTC on how to take care of our food, we didn't get sick. I think we were the only couple that didn't get sick. So you had to really be careful on what you ate, what you put on. They had these big wood cockroaches, and they flew, and, you know, and they'd like to fly in my hair at night and stuff because of the hairspray, I guess. And so it scared me to death. So anyway, I saw this big old cockroach one night. It was when we were in Ghana, and he was sitting on the end of the toilet seat, you know, kind of just sitting there, and freaked me out for some reason. And so in Ghana and both in Nigeria, the electricity wasn't really good. They'd have these brownouts. And so at night when I needed to go to the bathroom, I wore my flip-flops and made a lot of noise and hoped that, you know, there wasn't a big cockroach on the toilet. And there wasn't. So I was okay. It was just a different experience. And you get used to it eventually.
And it was during their time in Ghana that Anne discovered what she suspected to be breast cancer, which she thankfully overcame.
Well, I had a lump in my breast, but I wasn't going to do anything there because they, you know, in Ghana, they would have all of the x-rays out on the bushes drying and stuff because they didn't have the facilities. And so we made a pact, Bill and I, that if anything happened to us, we'd come home and have the surgery or do whatever. But anyway, we were able to stay there the whole time. And then when we came home, I had the surgery and I had radiation. And at the time, I was working at the MTC in the health department there. We checked all of the records for missionaries coming in. And so I worked there for 5 years, and it was fun. The Lord's got things worked out for you. You just don't know what they are sometimes. I would go down, have my radiation treatment, and then I'd leave from there and go to the MTC and do that, you know, work. So it just kind of felt like that everything was going to be okay. You know, that's just a feeling that you have. And then after that, they said I could go on a mission, but they want me to go where there's a good hospital in case it came back. So we went to San Francisco on our third mission, and we had a lot of good experiences there. Loved the missionaries. I was secretary to the president, and he was over the cars. And then we went to West Virginia mission, but we served the whole time in Virginia. And Bill was branch president there, so we had to work with the branch. And so it was kind of a different experience. And then we went to Cyprus, Greek Athens mission. So we went to Cyprus for a year, and that's the only mission we went for a year. The others we went for a year and a half. We enjoyed being there, and we went into Turkey. There was a member there that she was from South Africa or somewhere, and she wanted to pay tithing. And so we went into the city to get the money from her. And we got the money from her and brought it back. You know, the banks wouldn't take the money. And so we found out that way that we couldn't take money from her to pay tithing. She'd have to send it back to her home. So it was just, you know, it was a different experience for them. And the nice thing there was that some of our kids came to visit, and we went into Turkey. So it was kind of fun to just have the kids there.
Yeah. And did you feel connected to your dad while you were in Greece?
A little bit, yeah. But we went back and traveled in Greece when we got home and went to some of the places and did some genealogy and stuff. And that, I think, was more the tie to Dad.
And what about your mom? What can you tell me about her?
Mom didn't have good health. She had some kidney problems and different things. And so she died kind of early. She died about in her 60s. And so I just felt like I needed more time with her. So it was good that we had the time to spend that we did. Kim was little and Dale was little, but she didn't get to meet all of them. You know, a lot of times you wished your mom was there to help you with certain things, you know.
Anne is clearly a woman of great faith and has served so diligently throughout her life and trusted in the Lord's plan. I asked her how and when she developed her deep testimony of the gospel. So did you gain an understanding and love for the gospel from your parents?
No, they didn't come to church.
Was it just you or did your siblings go too?
Just me.
Did you take yourself?
Uh-huh.
What made you want to go?
Well, at first, it's because in the sports programs back then, you had to attend sacrament meeting 3 times or 2 times a month in order to be able to play. And so that was a motivation there. And it just got to be a habit. And I had a lot of friends that parents weren't active. And so we would walk together to church and, you know, to young women's and learn that way. I just learned that you grow by helping others. It wasn't all for me. Service is the fuel that you move forward with, and you have a good feeling about yourself when you can help others. The Holy Ghost has always been there. It's a feeling that if you really listen, that you can feel it. It's just a different feeling for me anyway.
Do you think you have a spiritual gift for that?
Mm-hmm. Our daughter, Connie, when she was about 3 years old, she couldn't pack a fever. If she got sick anyway or just a little cold, she would quit breathing. And so that was a time that I just, you know, you don't know what to do, but then you get a cold wash rag and you put it on her head and or put her in the bathtub in cool water and different things like that. You just, you know, go by the Spirit. And she outgrew it, and the Lord helped you. So the gospel's always been important in our lives. We've always tried to serve and do the things that we're asked to do.
Anne's life has been full of service. She is a selfless and hardworking woman, and you would probably never guess that she's 80 years old. She's an example of losing yourself to find yourself, as she's dedicated her life to her family and helping God's children. Thank you to Anne Cranny for allowing me to interview her, and thank you to Kim Houle for purchasing this episode. If there is someone you would like to have featured on Hearing Our Heritage, email hearingourheritage@gmail.com.